This is Ian Dayborn. Cambridge 105 Radio.
Cambridge 105 Radio, where I'm joined in the studio by a special guest on Sunday Brunch this morning, Nigel Fenner. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
And you came in on your push bike.
I did, yeah. Lovely day. And
it's lovely out there, yeah.
I live in Fendrayton, so it's about 10, 12 miles. Yeah. But on a day like this, you know, you can't beat it.
I'm impressed. But for your daytime job, you're a PE teacher, you were
well,
saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, at the moment, I work with one-to-one with young people who are excluded or finding school a challenge. And
right.
I do that sort of as a part-time job at the moment because, you know, my other hobby, my other love is obviously sporting Cambridge.
Wow. And so when you're just we'll talk about the sports tours in a minute, but I'm interested in what you say there. So when you're working with the youngsters who are excluded, where do you do that? Do you do that at a school or a special centre?
Well, it does vary in terms of their the extremeness, if that's a word, of their exclusion. So
yes.
Sometimes I'm in a room in the school, but more often than not, I'm in a cafe, public place in
right.
the community. And it's really just about working, getting alongside them and building up their confidence in terms of education. And so it's not PE that I teach them. It's really just about sort of building confidence. And
That's very interesting. And I would imagine quite a challenging role that not even qualified teachers a lot would struggle with. You've got to have a certain skill set to be able to do that, haven't you? They've got to like you, haven't they, I think?
Well, I think that I have enormous... you know, I think teachers faced by 25 young people, 35 young people in front of them have an enormous challenge in front of them. I think when you're working one-to-one, I think you can really develop a relationship. And, I really enjoy it because I think many of the young people that are excluded have issues beyond their education which need addressing. And I think, I'm not saying that I necessarily address them directly, but it's an opportunity for them to talk just beyond the education that they need. But there's baggage that needs to be addressed, and I hope I contribute in some small way.
Mm, interesting, fascinating. Mm. And as you say, alongside that, your interest in history, and I'm guessing that must go back many years, does it?
Well, interestingly, I mean, it's the first time I've come to history. I'd never really enjoyed it much at school.
Really?
But no, not really, because I was sport mad.
Yes.
So, and that's the reason I came to Cambridge, really. I mean, I came to train as a teacher, but I mean, ostensibly, it was to come to the university to train as a teacher, but also to get my football blue, which I was very fortunate to get, playing at Wembley, actually. In those
wow.
days, the football varsity match was played at Wembley. So in 1982, I played at Wembley in front of about 6,000. It felt like 60.
Yeah, I was going to say, 60,000. That's a record crowd, I say.
Sorry?
I'd say that's a record crowd, you know. If it's that sort of match, I guess.
Well, it was for me anyway, yeah. So I came to Cambridge to train as a teacher, but also to play my sport and football. And I suppose that's where I've sort of taken off. I mean, I played obviously a lot of football and a lot of sport before then, but coming to Cambridge and then I just began to immerse myself in the... gradually immerse myself in the sort of the history of the sport. Because obviously there's so much in Cambridge. I mean, obviously not just in terms of sport, but in all aspects.
Of course.
That are fascinating. But also, I came as a Fenner.
Yes.
And that's...
There is a connection, isn't there?
Yeah, that's right. So I did come as well with... and was featured in the local press just in terms... I knew nothing about my great-great-great-uncle, who was a local tobacconist, Frank Fenner.
Yes.
And he was the one who... was a great cricket player, but also a great match organiser. So he was the sort of fixtures secretary for the local town club. And he was asked by the university in 1848 to create Fenner's Cricket Ground. And the name has stuck. But actually what's a little sad, but it's what I'm researching at the moment, is that he sort of fell out with the university. And he also fell out a bit with the town. So that's a history that I'm exploring. So being a Fenner, I sort of feel as though I can talk with a little bit of authority in terms of local sporting history with a name like that.
And you must find, when you get introduced to people in this part of the world, with that name. Anybody who knows anything about, well, even if they don't know about sport, I'm sure you must often get asked the question, are you related to?
Yeah, I think it does open doors a little bit.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I'm really, really proud of that. And it's a fascinating history. I mean, he was the sort of archetypal, I mean, his father was a tailor, so it was sort of lower middle class. And the middle class really sort of were established in the Victorian times. It was sort of created on the back of the Industrial Revolution. And he made absolutely the most of that. He was a real entrepreneur, but did everything in terms of sort of church warden at Great St. Mary's. He had his tobacco shop in various locations around Cambridge. He was a constable. That wasn't with the police, but I think that was a sort of voluntary role. He was in the volunteer rifles and so on and so forth. So he just had fingers in all sorts of pies, as I suppose anyone with any sort of civic, you know, wanting to give as well as, in quotes, take. So he was an all-round good sort of bloke. And I'm sort of researching at the moment, wanting to find out more.
Yeah.
Certainly using cricket as the main focus, but he had a very interesting life beyond that.
Interesting. And how difficult has it been to dig up information about him, or has it been pretty straightforward because of that Fenner name and the fact that he was quite high profile in the area?
Well, you'd have thought that with all that I've described that there'd be lots of books written about him, but actually, obliquely, there are sort of books that refer to him, but nothing that's sort of deep and comprehensive. The person who I'd want to credit here is Willie Sugg, who, in fact, you get him in as a guest because his knowledge of Cambridgeshire cricket. So he knows about all the villages across Cambridgeshire, the history of Cambridgeshire cricket, but he also knows about Fenner and actually was intending to write a book on Fenner, but saw it as sort of too big a challenge. And so I'm working with him, and he's been really useful, really helpful in terms of just identifying, just some of the gaps that I've got.
So how long have you been working on the book currently?
Well, I'm no writer, and you sort of learn that it's almost like too late. You know, I've been doing it now for about a year.
Right.
And I started writing a history of Cambridge sport, so because I do walking tours as a qualified
yes.
teacher, walking tours around Cambridge, then it was very much related to the places. So obviously all the colleges, but also I don't want to restrict myself to the university, clearly out towards Barnwell and et cetera. So I've been collecting now for about 2 or 3 years any sport-related history related to any place. So
yes.
It's place-dependent. And so I've been doing that for 2 or 3 years, and I thought a year ago, let's put it together as a history of Cambridge sport, as if I was going on a walking tour around Cambridge. And that was sort of 90,000 words, and I was
wow.
sort of thought, that's good.
Yeah.
But there was something about it that wasn't quite right. It needed to come alive a bit. You know, it was like a history textbook. It had sort of references, nothing wrong with that, but it just sort of, it was a bit sort of cold. And then I thought, well, hang on, let's weave my uncle, great-great-great-uncle's story in the middle of that. And so what I'm trying to do at the moment is I'm going on a walking tour with him, an imaginary walking tour.
Right.
He's beside me, and I'm in dialogue with him. And so the places that I know from the history books that he performed, or we have a conversation about that.
Sounds like a really innovative way of doing it. And when are you hoping, when are you aiming to have this book ready for release?
Yeah, I don't want
publication.
To sort of make definitive promises because I've always
I'm going to pin you down now.
Well, I've had lots of deadlines, so I'm saying Christmas
right
this year.
Okay. I shall. Well, we'll have you back at Christmas.
Yeah, I'd be delighted to.
For your report. Okay, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. I want to talk about those walking tours. Let's pause for a second. Let's play a song and then let's come back and chat about those walking tours and perhaps how people can join you on them if they're interested in doing so. I'm joined by Nigel Fenner, part of the Fenner dynasty here in Cambridge. Used to run tobacconists and things like that. Nigel, a teacher by profession, but also a keen historian, writing a book all about sport. And also you do guided walks, don't you? We started to touch on that. Tell me a little bit more about the walks.
Yeah, I mean, Cambridge obviously has got an international reputation for its academia, and quite rightly so, and the number of Nobel Prize winners, et cetera, et cetera, that have come out of Cambridge. But I suppose, in a sense, that's probably hidden the fact that, and I've sort of got my list here, which I can sort of share with you, which goes on and on and on in terms of their the sporting prowess and achievements. I mean, I think most people know that it's the birthplace of the modern-day laws of football.
Yes,
so between 1838 and 1863, there were sort of five versions of rules that were created. And obviously, Parker's piece was critical from that point of view. And then the FA in 1863 picked that up and ran with it. And the Cambridge rules were sort of used as pretty much as the framework from which the FA and others then created the laws we know today. But linked to that, I mean, very few people know that Australian rules football...
I didn't know that, no.
...were established by three Cambridge graduates. So, and that was in Australia, but three of the four people who met to create Australian rules were Cambridge graduates. I can go on. First laws of cricket were written by... the second Duke of Bedford and another Cambridge alumnus, and that was in terms of sort of making sure that the huge gambling that used to take place, that there was a sort of a level playing field. So the rules were there,
yeah,
in terms of sort of gambling on a level playing field. Rules of boxing.
The Queensbury, the Marcus
Yes,
Queensbury
that's right. Marcus Queensbury was a student here, but actually he was just like the sponsor,
right.
John Graham Chambers, a remarkable man who no one knows about really, but was again a sort of a match, and he just organised all sorts of matches in, from sort of billiards to boxing to the FA Cup to rowing to, I mean, he did everything. A young man, so he was the one who wrote the rules. So the 3 minute round, you know, count of 10, the gloves, etc. That was 1865. Horse racing, the five classics, the flat racing classics, all come from students who were at the university. So can you name them?
Oh, no, I'm not very good on horse racing.
No, so 1,000 guineas, 2,000 guineas.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, the Derby, the Oaks and the St Ledger. So
they are the classic. And is there any connection with Newmarket being so close to the city, or was that there anyway?
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously Charles II who, you know, when he was restored to the throne, really gave a new impetus to sport, because the Puritans, you know, the Oliver Cromwells of this world, although that's another story, had sort of looked down their noses, long noses, at sport. And then when he returned, Charles II, then things like tennis and Newmarket, which was really picked up. So in the sort of from 1660, so clearly that was a 15-mile coach ride from Cambridge, and I think a lot of the students and obviously a lot of the local people would go out there, to watch the horse racing.
And you mentioned tennis there, because, of course, still in Cambridge, we've got Tennis Court Road, haven't we? And we still play, or people still play, the old version of tennis, which is different to the tennis that we see at Wimbledon. Is what's the story there? Is that a Cambridge connection, the beginnings of tennis?
There are two real tennis courts on Grange Road. And obviously the tennis, it's called jeu de pomme. So it sort of has a French origin. And Henry VIII famously, I mean, Shakespeare talked about sending, the Dauphin of France sent tennis balls over to Henry VIII and he sent cannonballs in return, you know. So, I mean, Tennis Court Road, there was a tennis court on Pembroke College grounds in the late 16th century. And Erasmus, the Dutch theologian and humanist, was at Queen's College. I mean, he was a visitor rather than... They're not quite sure. They think he was a visitor for about 4 or 5 years. And he used tennis, real tennis, as a way of talking about playing graciously, winning and losing graciously. But he also talked about the dangers of sweating when you play. So he wasn't just a sort of theologian, he was sort of quite practical. And he used it, yeah, with his students quite a lot. But he, so sweating was a real problem, because two French kings died as a result of playing real tennis. One banged his head on the lintel of the court, and another, through his sweating, caught a cold and then
died.
Very
sad. So
that's the tennis. But actually, coming more up to date, we have 28 Wimbledon champions who were students at
really?
The university.
Gosh, yeah. Can you, have you got any names there?
The Doherty brothers.
Yeah.
Anthony Wilding, I think. Yeah, Anthony Wilding at Trinity. But this is on all the beginning of the 20th
century.
So there were multiple winners, not just at Wimbledon, the Australian Open. Not quite so much. It was clearly Wimbledon that they mostly played at, but also Olympic Games, and tennis was in the Olympics. So 28 championships won. Obviously some in the doubles, but that's a little known fact.
Bunny Austin, was he a Cambridge man?
Yes, he was. Yeah, that's right. And he didn't win any majors, but he was the one to wear shorts for the first time.
Right, that's his claim to fame.
When you're a tourist guide, those are the little snippets that
those are the kind of things that make people remember the story, aren't they, I guess? Bits of trivia.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think the other thing that is remarkable as well in terms of the sport is that if Cambridge was a country, okay, on the Olympic medal table, it would now be 27th.
Really?
Yeah. So above sort of Portugal and Nigeria. So it's remarkable the hundreds of medals that were won. And obviously, in the Olympics started, you know, late 19th century, didn't they? And then so it was really in the Edwardian era that's when Cambridge really was churning out.
Became a centre of excellence, I suppose.
Sport. Yeah, that's right.
So Nigel, we could chat all day, but we're gonna run out. The clock's gonna beat us in a minute. What I definitely need to know from you is if people would like to come with you on your walks, how frequently do they happen, and how do people join them?
Well, I mean, at the moment, I put them on, and so they're reactive. So I have a theme, and I've got a history of football walking tour in Cambridge on Sunday the 26th of Jan, so a couple of weeks' time.
Right.
And that's sort of meet at 2 o'clock outside Trinity College. And you don't have to book, but it's a sort of first come, first served. And £8 a head.
Not bad.
So 2 o'clock on Sunday the 26th of Jan, and it's walking from Trinity College to Parker's Peace, sort of wending our way through the streets of Cambridge. And I've got the sort of the kind of topics that we're going to address.
Yeah, go on, please do.
Well, the local early history of folk football, and that was called Camp Ball.
Right.
In East Anglia. Fascinating story of... So it has a lot of bad press because a lot of people were... So, you know, I think people understand it as sort of 200 or 300... village against village, and yes, it was that, and it was violent.
Right.
But actually, in East Anglia, you know, recent research is actually showing that it was organised and promoted by the local authorities. So, so famous footballers with links to Cambridge, such as Oliver Cromwell. I mean, yes. I talked about him earlier, and the Puritans really putting a downer on sport. But actually, when he was here at Cambridge, a student here in Cambridge, he loved his sport. To the detriment to his studies. And I spoke earlier about the different versions of the rules in the mid-19th century. So I'll talk a lot about that in terms of why did they need them in those days. And we'll finish on the Parker's Peace, where the rules are inscribed on the new sculpture on Parker's Peace.
Excellent. No, that sounds really good.
And just a couple more things. The relationship between football and other sports in Cambridge.
Right.
So it obviously wasn't in a vacuum. There were obviously links with other sports. And then obviously the town. I want to talk about the town and the history of the clubs we've got locally.
Sounds brilliant. So meet Sunday the 26th. Just give me those details again. Yeah, 2 p.m.
At 2 p.m. I mean, if people want to email me...
Yep, go on, give us an email address.
It's Nigel at, and it's all one word, Cambridge Sports Tours.
Okay.
cambridge.co.uk.
So I would write that down, but I've misplaced my pen. But I'll tell you what, I'll take your leaflet with me. Yeah, yeah.
So nigel@cambridgesportstours.co.uk, and okay, just to let us know that you're coming.
And if people are rushing off and grabbing a bit of paper or whatever, I'll give those details out again in a couple of minutes' time, just brilliant, to give people a chance. Hey, listen, Nigel, it's been fascinating talking to you. I think we may have you back on here again, you know, because I think we need to do more of this stuff. That's Nigel Fenner, as in Fenner's fame. Good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Also, yes, I'll have to get you back in just before Christmas, just to, you know, your homework, Mr. Fenner. You know, make sure you've written your book. That's all I've asked you to do. Thank you for coming in and joining us on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Yeah, very much enjoyed it. Thanks for asking me. Cambridge 105 Radio.